From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley.
Napa, California.
I live in the Castro Fillmore District.
Vernal Heights.
Oakland, California.
Coming up, a pagan witch combats climate change.
It's really shifted where I understand spirituality as about actually opening up and listening to what's around us.
Then a Sonoma County rancher fights for her family's land.
All I want to do is to be able to stay where we've been for 100 years.
And we find out the answer to this week's audiograph mystery sound.
The fastest is wax paper.
Yeah, probably.
Oh my God, it's so fast.
We're letting things slide today on Cross Currents. In today's world, many of us live separate from nature. Shoes and concrete mean little direct contact with dirt. If it rains or snows, we can go indoors. We can even control the temperature inside. In this way, our lives are certainly easier than our ancestors. But some people believe the separation from nature is detrimental, hurting both the planet and our spirits. This is not a new idea.
I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived.
In the mid-1800s, Henry David Thoreau took a radical step to live in the woods for a year. The trend continues today. For example, author, spiritual leader, and activist Star Hawk. On a ranch in Northern California, she is blending pagan spirituality with a back-to-the-earth environmental approach. KALW's Judy Silber has the story, which comes to us from the Spiritual Edge Project.
Three hours north of San Francisco, just east of the ocean, rise the steep green hills of Casadero. It's an idyllic setting, open space with farms, a variety of oak trees, and an abundance of grasses. A mixed flock of sheep and goats nibble on the plants in an almost biblical scene. My guide and owner of these animals is named Starhawk. She points above us, to the trunk of a dead tree.
The woodpeckers there, they're making holes in the tree, and you can see them flying in with the little acorns in their beaks, and then they hide them in the tree and stash their acorns for the winter.
Starhawk is a keen observer of nature now, but she wasn't always so tuned in. Born Miriam Simos, she grew up in the San Fernando Valley, a suburban Jewish girl who longed for deeper connection with the natural world. Starhawk changed her name after dreaming of a hawk that transformed into a wise woman. This is an excerpt from her 1979 book, The Spiral Dance, that helped revitalize a pagan religious movement.
Witchcraft takes its teachings from nature and reads inspiration in the movements of the sun, moon, and stars.
At the time, she knew little about the nitty-gritty dynamics of nature. That came later. In the mid-1990s, when she took a permaculture workshop, where she learned a holistic approach to farming. Now in her 60s, she devours magazines like Permaculture Design. The knowledge has shifted her approach to spirituality.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when we think about spirituality or we think about meditation, we're thinking about some kind of practice where you turn your focus inward. You sit, you meditate, you watch your breath. But for me, it's really shifted where I understand spirituality as about actually opening up and listening to what's around us.
What do you think they're saying?
She's yelling us, nervous about something. She's calling for something, but she doesn't actually have babies, so she's not calling for her babies. Maybe she thinks somebody's wandered way too far from the herd, or maybe she senses something in the landscape. Oh, there's the dogs over there. I think that's what's making her nervous.
Starhawk lives part-time on this 40-acre ranch, where spirituality is often subtle, intertwined with the everyday business of tending to the land.
Sometimes we just wake up, you go get the sheep, you know, you take them for a walk.
Jonathan First is a practicing Jew, yet he's drawn to this brand of spiritual agriculture.
The magic is infused in the land, and putting your hands in the dirt, taking care of the sheep, collecting eggs, and interwoven into everything we do are small prayer moments. Then it's like one constant spiritual practice.
The criticism of some of those groups is that they're making it up. They're dilettantes.
Andrew Raymer is a professor in religious studies at the University of San Francisco.
Goddess from here, a goddess from there, a poem from this place, a song from that place, inventing it. And in some ways, that's a legitimate criticism. But in other ways, I think that when you have been cut off from your tradition, and by tradition, I mean when all of us human beings have cut ourselves off from our engagement and involvement in the planet and the cycles of the planet, we do the best we can to get back.
This getting back to the planet, for Starhawk and her land manager, Charles Williams, it's not only about connecting to the land. It's taking action to heal it. Remember the sheep? Charles, who does most of the shepherding, is quite deliberate about where he takes them.
I'm going to cross the creek, so if we can head that direction, it'd be great.
This approach has big benefits. The sheep trample down overgrown grasses, including invasive species. That becomes valuable compost. When Charles moves the sheep to another area, they also leave behind poop and altogether richer soil that encourages native seeds to sprout. These growing plants pull carbon dioxide from the air.
So they will put the carbon into their leaves. They'll put the carbon into their stems, into their seeds. They're going to put the carbon into their roots.
The ecology is shifted and is a step towards fighting climate change. To Starhawk, it's a perfect example of how science and spirituality can meet.
There's a lot of people now who are really trying to document what this kind of grazing can do and get the scientific data that can show, yes, this actually can work. You know, we know it works because we can see it, but then we'll have the numbers to prove it.
There's no creative permaculture solution to the drought that Casadero, like the rest of California, is facing. So this is where Starhawk pulls in other strains of her spiritual practice. When about 40 friends and neighbors gather for a spring party, Starhawk leads a ritual circle near a fire where meat from a whole sheep is roasting.
And just take a deep breath. Maybe close your eyes for a minute. Feel your feet on the ground. And imagine yourself like one of these plants or trees, taking root and feeling your roots push down through the rocks and the soil and down into this living earth.
The group walks a short ways to the water tanks. Some people tap them as they go around. Then they gather around a glistening tile mosaic, a new water altar.
We each had a chance to express something about what we cared about water.
Nourishment.
The concept of fluidity.
Something we were grateful for.
Making waves.
Fertility.
And apparently it worked.
That night, in my sleeping bag on the floor of a yurt, I wake in the middle of the night. Much to my surprise, it's raining. You may or may not believe that the ritual had anything to do with the rain. But participants did achieve a goal, remembering that we can't take nature for granted and that our connection to it matters. In Casadero, I'm Judy Silber for Cross Currents.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. For some people, land is a source of spirituality. For others, it's their livelihood. And often, it's a tough livelihood. Nancy Preblich knows just how hard it is. During the recent recession, she fought to save her family's fifth-generation Sonoma County farm from foreclosure. A new documentary called On Her Own follows her as she struggles to keep Gleason Ranch afloat. The film screens this weekend at the 14th annual San Francisco Doc Fest. Prebelich and filmmaker Morgan Schmidt-Feng came to our studio to talk to KALW's Rachel Dornhelm.
So this documentary starts in 2009. Nancy, I was wondering, can you tell me a little about Gleason Ranch then? Who was living on the ranch? Who was working there?
Historically, the ranch had been a dairy while my mother lived there as a and grew up there on the ranch. So there was just a lot of work to transform it from the old dairy into the facilities we needed for the new marketplace that we were entering into.
What was that marketplace?
We started our CSA, of course, Meat CSA, and then high-end restaurants and grocers. For example, one of our hugest supporters that I really couldn't have made it through the story that is the film without was By Right Market here in San Francisco and Farmers Market. Farmers Market was huge as well.
Did the prospects look good at that point?
Oh, that was the reason I said yes to all of these things. We were doing great. And the reason I said yes to Morgan was look at how we're doing, you know, and we're doing it with the family. And what I realized people were wanting and yearning was simply tradition and the way that my family and all the families in Bodega and in West County and in our village, the way we've just always been doing things. That was like the whole beginning of it was, this is awesome. We're doing great. Our sales are growing every month, every year. And then, of course, everything changed in 2010 when just one day Dad was no longer with us. And that was the start of everything going in the wrong direction.
And shortly afterwards, your mother passed away, mm-hmm. too, which it sounds like was also really unforeseen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both of them were totally out of the blue.
And then the effects of the Great Recession that started coming home to the farm then.
Mm-hmm. What happens on farms, we never account for our own time and our own labor. You just don't. you try to minimize it and you try to mitigate it as much as you can. But the reality of a family farm is that, you know, you really don't put that, certainly not at the stage we were at, you don't really put that in dollars and cents. When we lost both my parents and then suddenly we had to financially account for that loss, for that manpower and skill sets, and then we needed some capital, we needed some financial resources. Of course, the lending environment was extremely difficult and certainly difficult for a business like farming.
I have a clip from that time. It's from 2011, when I believe all of those challenges were coming to a head. Let's listen.
Monday, my house in Santa Rosa got foreclosed on. It got auctioned. It's the house that I grew up in for the last 35 years. I just stopped. I couldn't get out of bed for days. I just couldn't do it. I thought, well, maybe Cindy's right. What is the point of a farm and a ranch and a legacy and a history if we're neglecting our relationships and our families?
So you talk in that clip about Cindy, your sister, who her family was also involved in keeping the ranch going at that point. I mean, the way you're talking about the ranch there, it does feel like it was far more than a business to you. I'm curious what it symbolized to you at that point.
Oh, see, this is the part where I still get all sorts of choked up. In fact, I went to go see a rancher yesterday in the area and was telling him that I still can't drive by the place, or I can't even drive in that region. It's very hard for me too, because the ranch, the best way maybe I can explain it is an experience I remember with my father when I was small, very small, and
we were hunting. And he was telling me, you know, the reason we do this is to get away from the world and to my mom was a banker when I was very small. She was in the banking, very corporate world. And he says, you know, we do this to recalibrate ourselves. We lose sleep and our minds get cluttered and you go out in nature and you recalibrate. It was like, it was really knowing who we are. When we're in nature, we know our humanity. We know who we are as human beings. When then you can attach that to who you are ancestrally, it's like knowing what your DNA makeup is. I don't know. It's hard for me to put into words.
You're listening to Cross Currents. We're speaking with former Bodega rancher Nancy Prebelich and documentary filmmaker Morgan Schmidt-Fang. Morgan, I'm guessing this story didn't turn out the way you expected. I'm curious if you feel the film story may be closer to the truth, though, than the romantic idea many of us may have about how local food is produced.
Yeah, absolutely. It was not the marketing press release for the local, you know, farm with the pretty bucolic kind of, you know, barn and cow that's smiling, you know, in the background. I mean, that's, I think that everyone is working hard to do the right thing by themselves and the animals and the land. But the reality is that it's a tough business that can take your life.
And the reality is, I think there was a statistic at the end of the film that 330 family farms close, go out of business every week.
Correct.
In the United States.
According to Farm Aid, that's correct. Yeah. Forever.
It really shows the vulnerability that we have. Like, and that was what was very frustrating, especially being in wine country and being in Northern California, was being very well aware that technically I'm land rich, but I would drive my truck to deliver meat, having just enough gas to get to where I needed to get the check, to then have enough gas to get to the bank so that I could put more gas in the truck to get back home to the ranch. And yet I'm sitting among multi-million dollar estates. It's a very frustrating dynamic to be among where that I want nothing to do with the value of the property or the value of the region. All I want to do is to be able to stay where we've been for 100 years and to make that financially work.
That was Nancy Prebelich and Morgan Schmidt-Fang talking with KALW's Rachel Dornhelm. On Her Own plays at the SF DocFest this Sunday and next, June 7th and June 14th. For more information and to hear more of that conversation, go to KALW.org and click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. Now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's Audiograph's Julie Kane.
All week on Audiograph, we've been playing you this sound.
Can I get a piece of cardboard so it sounds more?
Just hold it.
Okay.
Ready, set, go.
The fastest is wax paper.
Yeah, probably.
Oh my god, it's so fast.
Ooh, you think you know what that was and where we recorded it? We sent KALW's Marlo McKenzie to the top of a hill in San Francisco to find out.
My name is Hannah, and I'm 10.
Yes.
I'm Isabella, and I'm also 10.
I'm Genevieve, and I'm also 10.
We are in San Francisco at Douglas Street at the big cement slides.
They're called the Seward slides, I think.
Seward Street or something.
I said sewage.
Okay. Ready, set, go.
When you start at the slide, you're like, oh my god, that's a long way down. And then once you're going, you're just kind of in the moment.
It's very thrilling as you go down.
When you jump off, it sort of feels like you're flying, like, because you go, woo.
If you lean forward, you go slower. And if you keep your hands onto the cardboard that you're sliding on, you go all the way to the, through the slide. You don't fall off in the middle.
Oh my god, he went face first. I'm Doug and I refuse to state my age.
I'm Cleo and I'm 12 years old.
I am still trying to find my technique. I have drawn blood. I have injured myself on the first time. I keep falling off my cardboard, which then makes me come to a screeching halt. So I have yet to perfect my slide technique. I've lived in the city for 25 years. I did not know this existed. I actually lived in this neighborhood for 3 years and did not know these were here. So they're very well kept. Do you know the history of the slides? Well, what I heard was that this parcel was going to be developed into some huge monstrosity, and the neighbors didn't want that.
There was a lot of neighborhood opposition. This is back in the late 1960s, and neighborhood housewives came out in their robes and kept the bulldozer from going on the site.
That one's faster, for sure. What, that side?
My name is Bill Murphy. So I've lived on the uphill side from where the slides are for 24 years.
Oh, that was great.
The city rec and park department was persuaded to purchase the land. There was a competition for what should be done with the site, and it was a young girl who came up with the idea for the slides. And the slides were built and landscaped and dedicated in 1973. The portion of the property that abuts Corwin Street was a weed-choked lot, and a group of neighbors got together and actually had the Rec and Park Commission change the designation of the land to a community garden. We have to go to the top for me to show you. So this is the upper entrance to the Corwin Street Garden. If you stand here and look in the garden, it seems rather improbable that a garden could ever have been established here, given that slope. Look at that. They couldn't be more different in terms of the kind of use they get and the kind of energy they have. The slides are focused on a thrilling ride down the hillside, as opposed to the gardens that are really for people come here for quiet contemplation, to be alone.
You really put in my mind the idea of play and contemplation, like side by side.
Contemplation. Whoa. Play and contemplation.
That's awesome.
Now let's go up in the garden.
Okay.
Now I know what's going to happen.
Thanks to Marlo McKenzie for that great peek into one of San Francisco's hidden neighborhood spots. Now, a lot of you recognized the screaming sound of cardboard on concrete this week, and not only from Seward Street.
I definitely know what that is because whenever my grandchildren come to visit, the first thing we do is go out to Golden Gate.
Correct
Park.
Seward Street, Upper Noe Valley.
And slide down that big
concrete or cement slide
in the big children's playground.
What a fun little ride that is.
Yay!
Bring your wax paper.
Our winner this week is John Pabst. Congratulations! We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt. And for the rest of you, we have an idea. A neighborhood slide atlas. Head to KALW's Facebook page and post your favorite slide. And if you have a photo, even better. And if you have ideas for where we should record next, give us a call, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Can't wait to hear from you. Can't wait to see your slides. Thanks for listening, and thanks for playing. I'm Julie Kane.
Thanks, Julie. You can also email us at news@kalw.org or catch up with us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Our team includes Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Hannah Kingsley Ma, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Raja Shah, Seth Samuel, Judy Silber, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. The line producer was Nina Gensler-Debs. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.